Hey guys, my name is Sabir Bharti. A very, very warm welcome to another episode of the Sabir Bharti Show, the place where I interview interesting people with interesting perspectives. My guest today is America's well-respected guitarist, Jonathan Taylor. That's spelled Taylor on Instagram at JT Classical Guitar Mastery, on TikTok at Jonathan Taylor Guitar, on X at JT Guitar Mastery. And you can also download Jonathan's musical app for free via Google Play for Android and Apple for iOS users via the website jonathantaylor.app, or you can just simply search Jonathan Taylor on either of those platforms. Jonathan Taylor, hailed as America's leading classical guitarist, has left an indelible mark on the global concert stage with a career spanning continents and accolades from esteemed sources. He has become synonymous with virtuosity and charisma. Reviews from around the world acclaim him as a fiery and charismatic guitarist and a master in his field. To date, Jonathan Taylor has released 32 albums with over 300 tracks, and it's an absolute honor and privilege to have him on the show today. A very warm welcome to Jonathan Taylor. Hello.
Thank you. An honor to be here. And thank you, Sabir. Very nice meeting you. We're having a great conversation off air.
We were indeed, just before we hit the record button, we were having a wonderful chat for about 5 to 10 minutes. And as I said to you off air, I'm super looking forward to our chat. I have been looking forward to our chat ever since we connected a few weeks ago. So from the
Me
bottom
too.
of my heart, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you. Blessings to you.
Jonathan, I wanted to rewind the clock because you had a profound and moving experience while hearing the music of a Spanish guitarist by the name of Andrés Segovia. Could you perhaps give us a glimpse into this experience and why it proved to be a catalyst for your own musical journey?
Sure. Well, when I was very young, my grandmother at home was a silent film organist. In other words, she played with all the people that you know about from the 20s era before talkies. She played with Lon Chaney, the Man of a Thousand Faces. Charlie Chaplin did many gigs with Houdini, many gigs with Harry Houdini in Pacific Northwest. And so I heard that music all the time in the background. I was picking out tunes and that on ukuleles when I was very infantile. And then along about 16, I went to the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion in Los Angeles area, metropolitan area, and saw Andrés Segovia. And Segovia, I had been listening to his albums. That's when there were albums, big. And I was in, it is hard to know why one person wants to become something and the other person merely wants to listen. So, I mean, what is the gulf? What is the transition? What is the bridge there? I was so enamored with not only the tone and the quality of the music, but that he's fingering, he's doing three things at one time. It's polyphonic, many voiced. It's not just single strings and, chords. And also it's elevated. Segovia inspired many composers to write for the guitar, become a legitimate instrument. Originally, he wanted to, his parents wanted him to be a cellist. A lot of people don't know that. And I'll go to your guitarist out there. I'll give him a hint. I'll give him a hint. I'll give him a little mini lesson here for a second. The reason why Segovia's fingering is so good, the best one that I've ever seen throughout many decades of playing, is because he was originally a cellist. And what does that mean? I go, well, the cello, of course, is tuned in thirds. The guitar in fourths, very different voicings. And when you play on, let's say, one string, you're trying to connect on that string the legato or the smoothness of those notes, and you can do it best by following that string. Now, what does that mean? There's a mini lesson, then we'll get back to the other. It means that you don't jump across notes because it's easy to do. What you do is you try to find where that line is, and it makes it sing. That is why. So that's a little mini lesson. And I go, well, that comes from being an instrumentalist on a bowed instrument and having that in his early development. Not that he ever wanted to, you know, his parents wanted him to be, he didn't want to. So that experience transformed me. And as I said, what is it that one person, like to become a great athlete, they see these great athletes and they want to be that great athlete. I had no desire to do that, you know. And so what is it? Why does a person, I go, that is a mystery of life, isn't it? It's a mystery. So that was definitely a life changing, because now I dedicated myself. And a lot of people, I go, well, you learn discipline and you learn steadfastness and you learn how to create, because there's really no pedagogy for the classical guitar like there is for violin and piano, for example. There's no pedagogy. And I go, well, then you have to invent the pedagogy. Anyway, I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, no, it certainly does. And I really appreciate you delving into that. And just as you were speaking there, and of course, you were just talking about your experience in hearing and listening to the Spanish guitarist, it reminded me of my own recent time in Spain. I've been traveling around Europe for the past few months since May of 2023. And I spent a lot of time in Andalusia in a city called Seville. And as I'm sure you're aware, there is immense history there in relation to flamenco.
Sure.
And the guitar plays such a pivotal role in the flamenco performance. I was wondering if you could perhaps speak to that in terms of your own experience of Spanish music and the
Sure.
rich
That's a great
history in
question.
Spain with
Yeah.
music.
So the Spanish masterpieces by the great Spanish Fernando Sor, Francisco Tárrega, Recuerdos de la Alhambra, Albéniz, everyone thinks that Albéniz wrote for the guitar, and I go, he never wrote for the guitar in his life. Everything is a transcription. He wrote for piano. And the Spanish masterpieces, here's what I thought as a youth. Naturally, I attacked them, you know, with a purple passion and to learn them all. But then after you've learned them, master, I've got them recorded. Then what do you do? I go, that's when I started to have my vision of expanding the repertoire and adding other American music. Yes, the Spanish masterpieces, they're just wonderful. They're wonderful. And that is one style of music, which is great, not to be disparaging in any way. But I go, yeah, but very little American music on the classical guitar, pop guitarists and that, but I go, but not the classical guitar. And that's why, I'll divert for a second with Seville, the Sevilla, which Albéniz wrote about, he wrote one for each city, Cordoba, you know, different ones. And I go, well, of the Sevilla, which is on the Guitar Chronicles album, which is I'm with Warner Brothers and Hit Lab, co-ventured label and distributorship and that. And I guess everyone in the world knows what Warner Brothers is. And so Sevilla is on that album. And what isn't? I go, well, it's a Spanish masterpiece, but basically it was written for piano. And nobody knows this. They think like Leyenda, right? I go, well, that was a piano piece. No way, it's guitar. And I go, okay. So Sevilla, yeah, and the Spanish masterpiece is wonderful, and the Moorish influence, Phrygian mode, and Dorian mode, and these things are wonderful. And as I was talking out, we were off the air, I was saying, well, the Spaniards are basically Moors. Like, all you need to know is Otello, and I go, who was Iago? Who was Otello? I go, they're Moors. And I go, that means they come more from the Arab culture than the European culture. And a lot of people don't know that. And I go, well, listen to the music. The music itself is telling you of that culture by the modalities in which it's expressed. So, yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. You're spot on. And as you mentioned, there is immense Arab influence in Spain, especially
Absolutely.
Andalusia. And I really had a magical time there. And I'm so happy that you actually mentioned the city of Cordoba. It was one of the cities that I stayed in for about a month. And I really felt a strong energy in Cordoba. It was a magical place. And I was, I think, 5, 10 minutes away from the Mezquita, which used to be a mosque, and then it was converted into a cathedral. And to this day, I believe it still has immense significance in relation to the area. But more importantly for me, I felt a real strong energy in the locality of that place. And it's a truly magical place, Cordoba.
Well, think about the Spanish authors like Cervantes, and of course his masterpiece, right? Tilting at Windmills, and I go, well, those mythical tales come from a region of Southern Europe, they call it. I don't even think of it as Southern Europe. I think of it as more of an Arabic enclave. And I go, well, back in those days, there's all sorts of wars going on, of course, the endless wars. And Segovia, he was born in Linares, and I think he died on his couch in Linares. I'll tell you an interesting story about him. So he's now 93, and people are saying, why don't you retire? Yeah, blah, blah. And he goes, and do what? I go, that's the perfect answer. You really? And do what? Sit at home and watch television? And I go, God, he could handle 200 dates a year. I couldn't handle it. He can handle 200 performances a year. I could not handle that. No way. The traveling alone would destroy you. Just the planes.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's a lot of performances, a lot of travel. I'm super enjoying our conversation so far,
Me too.
especially the points that we're touching on in relation to Spain, Spanish history, musical influence. Great stuff. Jonathan, beyond your musical pursuits, I know that you are someone who really enjoys literature, intellectual exploration, and meeting new people. How would you say these diverse interests of yours contribute to your life experiences?
Ever heard like a little kid play the piano and it's the driest thing you ever heard? And the reason why is because there's no experience. What is he communicating? Can he play the proper notes? He can play the proper notes, but that's not music. A computer can play the proper notes. So I go, but that's not music. So I go, where does the music come from? I go, probably from every experience you've ever had. And you're drawing on the feelings and emotions of those, and you have the technique to convey that in your music, whether you're playing the classical guitar or the violin, whatever it is. So I think that those experiences come out in your music. There's when people say, oh, that's a good piece, I go, let's say you hear a piece of music and somebody says, that's a good piece, and I go, the piece is okay. And I go, but I'm trying to listen for what's not there as well as what's there. And what does that mean? I tell people, I go, well, by the time I was in my late 20s, I had the technical prowess of Segovia and the other big players, Bream and all that. But I didn't have the burnishing, the seasoning. So I say that to people because I go, that can only come with what? Just because I learned the Chaconne when I was 20, I go, yeah, but you can't even play it till you're 40. Not to really play it. You can play it, but to make it multidimensional and have it have depth and feeling, I go, that's the different thing that comes with seasoning.
Fascinating stuff. And I know you've also, because we spoke off air, as you're aware, a few days ago in preparation for this chat. And as part of that conversation, you mentioned and you highlighted the importance of being exceptionally good at your craft as a form of self-refinement. Could you perhaps delve into how you balance the pursuit of mastery in your art with the ongoing process of personal development and personal refinement?
Sure. So think about what a 10-year-old has to go through in order to start playing the instrument, discipline. And what does it do? And I go, well, you become disciplined. I go, whether you're a classical musician, whether you're a great athlete, I go, if you don't have discipline, you won't do it. What do you have to do? You have to overcome obstacles. You have to overcome technical problems that are the hardest in the world, without a doubt. And so you're overcoming, and you don't refine the music, I say to people. When people say, oh, you're refining the piece, I go, I'm not refining the piece. The piece is already perfect. I'm refining myself. I go, the piece is right there. There it is. It's telling you who it is. It's telling you with all its markings, all its notes, and that. And what do I have to do? I go, I have to change myself to adapt to that. A lot of people, they don't respect the score. They're not respecting. I go, well, but that's what was written. And now, there are times when the score isn't respectable and it has to be altered, of course, too. But I go, the real journey is to refine yourself. And it would be the same with these great athletes that are good. It's the same with there's somebody with my name that's a black football player, and he's very famous. So I tell people, if you want to find me, just type Jonathan Taylor guitar into Google. Make sure to put guitar in there, otherwise you get a black football player. And although I look like a black football player, I am not a black football player. So I laugh and say that because I go, well, this guy is a great running person, or I don't know what position he plays. And I go, but he got tremendous skills. And so I go, you're refining yourself, basically.
Fascinating stuff. And this idea of personal refinement, personal growth is something that I've been thinking about more so in the last 6 months, because I've had some transitions in my own life, in my own life in terms of location, and also my work as well, which changed about 2 to 3 months ago. So I've been in this zone more recently where I'm thinking a lot about what my next steps are. So I'm always fascinated to get insights into my guests' life stories when it comes to their
Well,
own
let me
development.
say something. Maybe oaths are important. I'll give you an example. When I was 16 and I heard Segovia, about 17, I was going, well, now I'm in it. I have to. It was a very disappointing moment because it means you have to take responsibility. It's a very depressing moment to commit yourself to something. And why is that? And I go, because it's goddamned hard. That's why. And if you take an oath that I'm going to be a major player, I'm going to do all the work, that is a big burden. That is a big, and it's not some fun, oh, glory and all that. And I go, you're not even thinking like that. So those oaths, and I'm saying that with regard to you, I go, well, if I don't sit here in this chair for an hour and refine, I don't know, the right hand fingering, or the way the knuckle is moving improperly, or something, then I go, well, I'll never get anywhere. I have to commit to that. Okay, I'll show you an analogy. There are many ways to explore this universe, and some of them turn out well, and some of them turn out crap. You go halfway up the mountain trying to refine your technique, and it doesn't work, and you have to go all the way back down to get to the top. This is a analogy Segovia used to say all the time. And I go, well, you don't, that one didn't work. And I go, think about John Clerk Maxwell, who took Michael Faraday's work on electromagnetism. And really, in four equations, basically stated everything about electromagnetism. Now, that's unbelievable when you think about it. That means every single thing on this computer, on the medical equipment that monitors your heart, every single thing that has electricity, anything, incandescent light bulb, all the motors, electric motors for cars. And I go, every single thing is contained in those four equations. Now, why is that? Why am I bringing this up? And why is it important? And why is it on this issue? Here's why. You don't know what you don't know. You don't know what you don't know. And that means that hundreds of years people wanted to do things. Hundreds of years people wanted to go to the moon. I go, it took the Americans to do it. You know, it didn't take humanity, as people say. I go, I don't remember the humanity taxpayers paying for it or doing of that. No. So what I'm saying is to find something that's gold takes a lot of work. And sometimes it can be encapsulated in just a simple thing like E equals MC squared, right? I go, well, that's the conclusion of all his other of his other permutations as he worked through that. That's the conclusion. So when you're trying to find new ways, I find it helpful to take an oath. And here's what I mean. I'm going to learn this piece by Wednesday. You know, I'm going to this difficulty that's going on with my hand or something. I'm going to, you know, refine it from this point of view. So all those things, it's drops in a bucket. It's not some big jackpot payoff, like, you know, the gamble with the lottery, those things. I laugh. I go, nobody, do you know that anybody that gets that lottery, they lose the money in a couple of years because they don't know how to manage money. So they get a few million dollars, whatever it is. And I go, oh, I go, it won't matter. They'll spend it on cars and, you know, things like that.
No, I love that concept of the oath. Thinking about the oath and then being really firm with the oath, because in a way you're giving yourself something to be accountable to, right? And it's
Right.
being very concrete with your aims and your goals, and saying out loud to yourself, this is what I want, this is what I want to go for. So I think I've been guilty of that of late as well. I have so many ideas rushing around in my mind. And when that happens, sometimes I fail to actually stick to an idea and then try and attack it as best as I can.
If you write on a piece of paper one thing, I will not eat today. It doesn't matter what it
Doesn't
is,
matter what
right?
you're, I'm yeah,
Yeah,
I'm definitely going
and
to
I go, keep that in mind.
No, for sure. No, I appreciate that. I'll definitely taking that on board, and I will be sure to action that. Jonathan, I wanted to switch gears slightly. Reflecting on the brevity of life, you emphasize the importance of not whining or complaining. How does this mindset influence your daily life, and how would you say it's shaped your own decision making and priorities?
Well, first of all, I never get angry. In other words, I don't believe in it. And I go, what's it going to solve? I go, usually anger is felt when people feel powerless. So they want to, the anger has some power in it. So they react in that way. And also that no amount of worry or complaint ever improved conditions at any time in history. Whether it's the Peloponnesian War or whether it's, you know, I can't find my goddamn car keys, you know, there is no such thing as that. I go, therefore, I go, that energy, everything you do takes energy. And if I'm thinking in those that way, I go, I'm wasting my energy, I'm wasting my time. It's a very limited life here on Earth, 100 years or less normally. Usually less. And I go, I think that's going to expand. I think we've got the rebirth of medicine with AI. It's incredible, I'm sure. It's also the worst downside in the world as well. And but I go, well, you only have a very short time, and what you fill your time with, you're choosing whether you know it or not. I don't ever feel frustrated either. That nothing frustrates me. And I go, well, but how will that get me to my goal? You see, how will that, where is the magical link that's going to help me? I think in life also, we have to rethink everything we think. We have to rethink it. And the reason why is we learn in these patterns that are very limiting and maybe to somebody else's advantage that it was put there, right? Go and go to school and get a job. And I go, well, then you'll be a slave all your life. I go, then you, I go, if you own a business or if you have assets, equity in something, then it's different. And I go, but I think what we learn is some things that are not helpful to us. I realized very early on that most of what I learned in the government schools, people call them public schools, I go, well, how's that going to help me? Did I learn my letters? Yes. I go, but I'm the one that went to the library and read the poetry of Omar Khayyam, when I was 10, or come fill the cup and in the fire of spring, the winter garment of repentance fling. The bird of time has but a little way to fly, and lo, the bird is on the wing. In other words, I'm the
Wow.
one that do that. All those ideas of literature. Okay, I'll give you another one. So if we have that narrow view that the schools, now I don't even see a use for them. I mean, for the professions, I'll say yes, for engineering, for law, for medicine, okay, maybe I'll agree with that. But I go now, I go, there's almost nowhere in the world that you can't access 90% of what is available from the internet. You can teach yourself anything. I'm right now learning, I'm interested in having a deeper knowledge of the table of elements because I'm thinking about metallurgy. I'm thinking about all sorts of things in Sparta recently. Because even after their victory, their society fell to pieces because they were so narrow. And it's a real interesting thing you learn from history. So my view is that you have to self-educate, and there's no time in history that we don't have a better way to do that. In the 70s, we didn't have the internet to look up Google, who died on this day in Massachusetts, whatever, right? And the way we learned are the wrong, it was the Prussian model. Western civilization is based on a lot, the schooling is based on the order model, where you don't allow the person to make a mistake, but you correct them. And I go, the mistake is what you want. I tell people, I have students, and I haven't taught many students in years, privates, that is, master classes years ago. But I tell them, I go, if you can't make a mistake and you're afraid of making a mistake, you will never learn. I go, you're not making enough mistakes. You don't understand what your hands are doing. You don't understand what the music is doing. Screw it up. And a perfect performance. I won't say the person's name, he's very famous. A very famous cellist I heard speak and say is Asian. He's a great artist, a great artist. And said, it took me this many years to say that it was perfection I was looking for. And my view is the very worst thing you can do is look for perfection. I go, a computer is perfect. I go, that is the most boring rendition of that piece I've ever heard. I want passion. If you make a couple mistakes, who gives a shit? All right. So relax. And so I think that we have to teach ourselves things. We have to explore. We have to question our assumptions. And that's a difficult thing to do. A lot of people don't want to question their assumptions. And when they say follow, when you've heard people say follow the science, I go, follow the science. I go, it's changing every minute. I go, the whole purpose is to overthrow almost all innovation. There is refinement, but almost all innovation is against the grain. It is against what went on before. I have a buddy of mine. Then I'll stop this. But I have a buddy of mine that I say, he's a Catholic friend of mine. And he, well, Jonathan, you'll have to look at it with peer review. And I go, that is the stupidest thing I ever heard. I go, you think the communist commissar gave the order for Edison to invent the light bulb or, whatever it is? I go, no. I go, it is that one person. I'll tell you a quick story about that concept. There's a doctor, I don't know his name, and he, for thousands of years, people have thought we have ulcers. It's in Roman writings, maybe Satyricon, maybe other things, maybe Zeno. And so you have, oh, we have these ulcers. Well, we don't have ulcers. There's no such thing. It's a misnomer. It's a mistake. A gentleman discovered it was bacteria, H. pylori. Take 2 weeks of penicillin or ampicillin, a similar. I go, and you're done. And I go, now it was written for thousands of years. I've got an ulcer. Take Maalox, you know, all these things. And I go, and you know what happened to that doctor? And here's the story. He was destroyed by the community. He was destroyed. What is he? Oh, he's a quack, snake oil Sam, endangering lives, all the crap. And I go, oh, he's a genius, is what he is. He's a genius. And I go, he discovered something that thousands of people throughout history thought was one way, and he overturned it. They destroyed that doctor. And then years later, when they all jumped on board, same thing is true with Einstein, I go, oh, then now he's the genius, and he's the lift him up and restore him to favor. I go, yeah, where were you when he actually, he broke the mold. He did something wonderful, very wonderful. So I go, peer review? I go, it's nothing. The peers were wrong about equals MC squared. They thought Einstein was a crack. Max Planck brought him under his wing, and it took him like 3 years after publishing Brownian motion and special relativity and the other one, photoelectric effect. And I go, it took years until they welcomed him into the fold, into the brotherhood, the physics brotherhood. And I go, what did they do? I go, they tried to make him, he's like a kook, right? That he's a crazy person. He's nothing. Yeah, well, so I think that in our lives, so there's a long, see, I'm gonna end here, that I go, it is always against the grain that great new developments come about. They're always thought of as kooks and nuts and all the rest of it. So I think in life we have to examine many of our preconceived notions about things.
It's really interesting that you like to go in depth with your responses. And I love the different avenues that you're going down, because you touched on some really interesting topics. And as you were speaking there, especially there were two things that particularly stood out for me. The first thing was the idea of perfection, that perfection doesn't exist. And the second one was that if you want Often, if you want to do something different that stands out, you have to go against the grain. And as I mentioned a few moments ago, the idea of perfection. This is another concept that I was grappling with and have been grappling with over the last few years. In my TV days, I always thought that perfection was possible. But what made me realize that it wasn't was that I could only count on my left, on one hand, the amount of times I thought I came as close to perfection as possible. Never reached perfection, but flirted with the level of perfection. And I worked on over 600 shows, and honestly, maybe two episodes came close to perfection, which for me was a real lesson to say the aim should never be to reach perfection, but to try and come as close to perfection as possible. And as someone who's got a lot more life experience than me, I was wondering what your take is on perfection as a
Okay,
concept.
there are many religious people, and not to offend anybody, who say one person or that person is perfect. And I go, well, if I'm perfect, that means I don't have to grow. Because if I'm already there, why do I need to grow? I'm
Interesting.
perfect. And I go, if I am not going to be able to grow, shoot me. Put me down like a horse. Okay? I mean, because I want to grow. At the end of life, I'm going to slide in to the Grim Reaper and say, woo, what a ride. That's what I want. And at the end of my life, I want to be so freaking tired. I'm like, oh, that I'm done. And I go, well, my body's given out and, I'm pretty much done. And that I don't look upon it as a sad thing. I've been close to death a few times. And I go, I don't look upon it as sad and a terrible thing. I go, be sad if I didn't follow my dream. I go, that'd be really sad. And then what did I do? What, make money? Who gives a crap? Right? So I go, and what? Now I have a fancier jacket? Okay, this jacket's just fine. And so I totally agree with your philosophy, Sabir, that perfection is also what at that moment What does it mean? It doesn't have a clear definition of perfect. What was perfect? When you're recording, so severe, because you and I both record. You record on the television, I record either audio or the film, right? And I say, well, was this take better than that take? I go, I don't know.
Yeah.
That is just different. And well, which one do you want? I go, I don't know, which one do you want? Because I go, it could be either way. And so when people say, is this one the perfect? And this is the perfect? I go, well, this one has more of this element. This one has more of this element. And I go, which one do you take? It's a coin toss, you know? They say, oh, Jonathan Taylor plays the Chaconne like this. I go, yeah, on a Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock in, 2008, right?
Yeah.
I go, that's what, and the next day I go played it differently.
Yeah, no, that you're absolutely right. When you actually put these examples under a microscope, so moments when we thought something was perfect, or when we had the choice of two outcomes, and when we went for one over the other, what is it that makes us think that it's the better outcome? And I guess what you're saying is, in truth, perhaps there isn't the best outcome. It's just our perception of one being better than the other. And I've never thought about it like that. And I think
Different
it
qualities, different qualities.
qualities,
This one
yeah.
maybe, yeah, maybe this one has a better use of dynamics, this recording, or
Sure.
and maybe this one has a better use of, something else.
Yeah. Absolutely. But yeah, I think your approach is really good because it allows one to let go of this idea of perfection, which from my experience can be quite overwhelming because one puts so much pressure on themselves. And certainly I did in the early stages of my career, a huge amount of pressure. Why? Because I thought that I was trying to reach this level of perfection and only later realized actually I was such an idiot because perfection just doesn't exist. It's really interesting. So thank you for sharing your thoughts. And a moment ago, you mentioned that you had a few near-death experiences, which leads me very nicely on to the next question that I wanted to pose to you. In the past, you've expressed a belief in the mysteries of life, and you had a period in your life when you grappled with the meaning of life and existence. Could you perhaps give us a glimpse into what this period of your life was like for you?
Well, I studied a lot of different religions. I've read the Bhagavad Gita, the Mahabharata, the Quran, the Bible, of course, the Torah, studied the Kabbalah, studied Eastern Upanishads. So I believe those lessons. And so people say, what do you believe, Jonathan? I go, I believe there is a God, and I believe nobody in the world has any idea what that God is like. And I go, it's very vain and foolish to think we just now, in the past couple hundred years, got the Industrial Revolution. In other words, we're very from our perceptions are very limited. I have a buddy that is a plastic surgeon. He does reconstructive, not just the Hollywood types, but he does reconstruction for people who've been in auto accidents and facial reconstruction and all that. And he said to me about perceptions. I said, well, why? We're talking about the eyes because he had to put an eye in. A guy had so the orbit here, I guess it's called. That had broken and the eye had gone way back and the optic nerve and all that. And so we were talking about the eye and he said he found the eye back there that he thought it was lost. Then he found it in some weird place. And so he said to me, Jonathan, if our eyes vibrate, the cones and rods actually vibrate to the frequencies of light that they're receiving. And said, if they vibrated at a little bit different level, you could see through the wall. He said, there's light coming through it right now, Jonathan, the wall, but you can't see it. You don't have the mechanism to perceive that. And I go, really? So like Superman's X-ray vision has a basis in fact. And so he said, yeah, but we don't, of course. And I said, well, why not? And he goes, well, you don't need to see the food, you don't need to look through the wall to find the food. And I go, interesting. So, and what he was saying is that our perceptions are so minimal. They're so small. So when you ask about religion and about God, do I think anybody in the world knows more about God than you or me or anybody else? No. And the reason why is we're presuming all sorts of things. Do I think there was a force that created everything? I absolutely had to be. There's no way all this is chance and that. Is Darwin correct on mutation within the species? Yes. Is he wrong about crossing? Has to be. There are no mermen, mermaids. There are no goat men. You know, there are none of those things in the fossil record. So I go, well, it doesn't cross species for whatever reason. I don't know why. But I go, well, so far, nobody's found that. And so I go, if you could, now I'm not saying they couldn't do it in the future. Maybe you'll be able to, you know, take this salamander's ability to grow his tail when it's cut off and make it so you can grow your arm. I go, if you can figure out that genetic code, that'd be great, you know, and all that. But do I think that anybody knows exactly what God is? No. And do I th think that everybody has their opinion? I go, yeah, but I go, what is that? What does it mean? How do you know? So I go, but if you read the religious text, I go, there's incredible value just for how to live your life. So I'll give you one with Arjuna and Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, the center part of the Mahabharata. And of course, Krishna is disguised as a bearer with King Arjuna, and he's carrying him. He's a, you know, carries the thing he sits in, right? And you walk the throne. And so Arjuna, and this is a great teaching point and has a lot to do with the religious views of the Hindus, says, well, Arjuna realizes it's Krishna who is carrying him. Krishna, my Lord Krishna, right? And so he says, but how can I do battle with my brother over there on the hill? We're going to, there's so many thousands of people going to kill each other. He says, how can I do battle with that? And Krishna says, well, that's your duty. That's your duty. Well, I'm killing my brother-in-law, killing this person. And he goes, well, they'll incarnate in another thing. So I go, well, all these lessons show how people think throughout history, how we can take that one, and we may not want to follow the duty of what he's saying, but I go, well, what is duty? I go, duty is joy when it is transformed. Once you go through the fire, and you do that duty of playing that Bach piece over and over, I go, you're at the other end. And I go, you're illuminated. You're in a whole different place. And I go, the duty brought you the joy, and it gave you the direction to venture out where you weren't venturing before. So to answer your religious ideas, I think there's great things in the Quran, great things in the Bible, great things in all of them. You know, the Babylonian texts, right? What's his name? Enkidu and you know, there and Marduk and different religious principles. And I do so, but do I believe that there's just that we know? I go, it's so arrogant. One may be a biblical scholar or a Muslim scholar, I go, you're a scholar of that book. There's no doubt about it. But I go, but that doesn't necessarily mean no, you know anything more about God than anybody else. So it's probably unpopular with some of your listeners.
No, no, not at all. It's always fascinating to hear different perspectives when it comes to these subjects, the divine. And what you just mentioned there just made me remember something. I believe it's certainly in the Quran, and perhaps it may also be in the other Abrahamic texts as well, where God says, the more you get to know me, the more you realize there is so much more to know. Which is essentially what you were saying is that
Yeah.
we can never
And now
know,
with it,
we can never know
exactly.
in full. Yeah.
Yeah. And even now, just the past couple of years here with the new James Webb telescope out there, I go, well, it's already changed the
Yeah.
theories. Now the Big Bang is being brought into question because the galaxy should be young, older, but they're younger. And that means they weren't traveling at that rate. And so I go, and maybe time, the whole space-time thing, yes, it's great, wonderful, you can't go faster than light, all blah, blah. On the other hand, I go, well, maybe that element is wrong, because that's what you do. You rearrange everything. I go, maybe they're those ideas of the forward-moving time, maybe that's wrong. Oh, Jonathan, it happens that way. And I go, yeah, maybe something else is going on. And so my point is that you can't. We have drops, and there's a vast ocean in front of them, and we have a cup with drops of water in it, drops of water.
Yeah.
And I go in front of James Webb telescope. I mean, it's mind blowing. I go, they think there should have been these galaxies there, and they weren't. You know, they were totally different. I go, I love it. That's the
Yeah.
type of groundbreaking thing. I go, now we have to rethink space-time. Oh no. And people try to fit it into their narrative that they know. I go, might not be the narrative we know. Might be a
Absolutely.
completely different narrative that we are totally unaware of.
Yeah.
And a dark matter, right? You can't even see it, right? And it's the majority of what exists as far as we know. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have religious views. I believe God and God. I believe God created everything, how he did it. I go, nobody knows how. But people try to pretend they know how. I go, you don't know that. To know is different than to believe or to hypothesize or to theorize. I go, to know is different than we think it may be, or these are the facts and we theorize this. I go, oh, to know is very different. You know, so I
Yeah.
think that we have to look at religion with an open mind, and it has lots to teach us.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for sharing your insights. Before we wrap up, there was one final subject area that I wanted to touch on, and it was all to do with effort. Now, I know from your side, you've done tremendously well throughout your musical career. I believe 32 albums, over 300 tracks. And to achieve such milestones in your life and in your career, I imagine it takes a certain level of dedication and effort. And effort is something that I've been thinking about over the last 2 to 3 months, because I'm really trying to push my own levers, my own effort levers, to try and get to where I want to get to with my own individual projects. Could you perhaps give us some tools, tactics, and strategies of how one can stay on the right path in terms of effort, and how can we move towards making the most out of the projects that we're working on through the effort that we apply?
Okay, so to try and find out where the tipping point is for one's career or for one's effort is a very difficult thing. And the amount of effort that goes into something, like I play at least 40 minutes a day. I hate it when I miss one day. And I'll play more than that, depending upon what's going on. But that type of discipline and that, when I was in my 20s, I literally went through most of the repertoire that exists for the classical guitar. Not every single piece, but I'd say a good 75, 80%. To read through all that material changes you, because now you have a relationship to them, right? So I tell people that they have to onslaught themselves with many different things. Who, if we know how to use any piece of information that we are given to our advantage, that's what we want. We want to be able to use that information, in a practical way. We talked about Maxwell's equations. I go, those equations changed the world more than anything else in the 19th century. Meaning all that technology, the Industrial Revolution, I go, every single thing was because of that. And I go, that changed humanity more than people, hardly anybody understands that. And the reason I'm saying that, hardly anybody understands that, is I go, well, in 10,000 years, they'll look upon this period of time, let's say the 19th century, and the American Civil War will appear as if it is a regional conflict. It'll appear as nothing in comparison to the discovery of electricity and Maxwell's equations and that. I go, all those things that everyone thinks are important, it'll be a footnote. It'll be nothing.
And before we wrap up, and I will remind everybody of how they can follow your work, is there anything else that you wanted to mention? Perhaps something that I've missed out in my questions at all?
No, the app is the easy thing to do. If you just want to get records and all that stuff, just type Jonathan Taylor guitar into Google. Make sure to put guitar. But the app is free, and that's where all sorts of stuff is. I mean, performance videos. I have a series called Adventures in Touring about many of the tours I was on and my adventures in foreign lands, as they say. And if you just go into Google Play, if you're an Android user, and type Jonathan Taylor, no space, and you'll get it for free and you can download it. It'll appear. And if you go into Apple iStore, iPhone, just type Jonathan Taylor.
Amazing. Jonathan Taylor, thank you so much. It's been an
Thank
absolute
you.
honor and a privilege having you on the show.
Same here.
Just a quick reminder to everybody who's watching and listening, how to spell Jonathan Taylor's name. So the last name is TayLor. A quick reminder of Jonathan Taylor's social media platforms. So Instagram at JT Classical Guitar Mastery, on TikTok at Jonathan Taylor Guitar, on X at JT Guitar Mastery. And as Jonathan just mentioned, you can download, Jonathan Taylor's musical app for free via Google Play for Android users and Apple for iOS users via the website jonathantaylor.app, or simply search Jonathan Taylor or Jonathan Taylor Guitar on either of those platforms, and it will pop straight up. As always, I'll include all of Jonathan Taylor's social media links in both the YouTube and the podcast descriptions. If you haven't yet subscribed to the Sabir Bharti Show, it would mean a great deal to me if you did. And if you did subscribe, then of course you will be notified as and when new episodes are uploaded, both on YouTube and Spotify, Google, and Apple Podcasts as well. Thank you for tuning in to the Sabir Bharti Show. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I have. Until next time, do take care of yourself. Have a blessed day. Bye-bye.